Okay. The so-called president of the United States is in trouble. As soon as the heat was on about Trump or the people in the White House that he's brought in, or the Secretary of State that he's hired, having close ties to Russia during the actual campaign, when it's quite clear that Russia actually interfered by hacking, and of course Trump saying, "Hey Russia, hack more emails, please. Take my wife, please. Take my Clinton, please." As soon as it's becoming clear that the intelligence community, whom he's already insulted, that's not a smart move, the intelligence community is going after Trump to find ties that he has with Russia that may have conspired during this campaign, Trump is saying to himself, "Holy crap, they're starting to have a lot of stuff on me." And he's getting mad about it. So what he does typically is he throws out smoke bombs in order to dissuade your attention. And so he threw out over the weekend the smoke bomb of the Obama administration wiretapping Trump Tower during the campaign in order to gather it. He says, "This is worse than Watergate," all that kind of stuff. Without divulging one shred of evidence or proof, it's probably because someone told him that that was possible. Now he's thrown it out. And in doing so, he's thrown out his credibility. This has got to stick, otherwise his credibility is zero. He's doing this, in my estimation, to get the heat off of this Russia thing about him. He is a conniving, manipulating kind of guy, and he's getting worse. And here's the weird part about how psychopathic he really is. Now listen to me, hear me out. He goes before Congress and gives a speech that is kind of okay. It's not great, but it's kind of okay. You got to realize the bar is set really low. When Obama gave a speech, it had to be really, really good because all his speeches were like very, very artistically wonderful. And that was a fact. Trump's speeches suck earthworms. They are so down to the ground that they're even underneath it. So if Trump gives anything that's passable or has the slightest a bit of optimism or leadership, the slightest amount in the speech, it's amazing. It's a revelation. The bar is so low for this idiot. Don't you understand that? But he actually comes away with good reviews for his speech, where some Americans are actually saying, well, let's give him more of a chance. Then, just days later, this surfaces about Russian ties and the people in his cabinet having Russian ties. And I'm not talking about the ties that you put around your neck. I'm talking about the ties that may help you swayed a relation and an election. There's swaying going on. So he feels the heat and he gets angry because leaks are coming out of the White House. Like the public is learning about stuff I don't want them to know about. The press is learning about stuff I don't want them to know about. So I want everybody's phone on my desk, Trump says. And I want to go through your phones and make sure that you are not the mole. You're not the one telling the press what's going on in here. I want my White House to be secretive. I don't want the American public to know what we're doing. Because this is a democracy, and nobody should know what we're doing. He's amazing, man. He's amazing. And most of you just don't give a shit about it. A lot of us do, but a lot of you don't. So what he does when the heat is on, he throws out the smoke bomb and came up with the Obama wiretapping thing. So he goes from higher ratings from his speech days later to plummeting ratings again. People don't trust him. They think he's a lunatic. My one wish, and this is all I'm really looking for, I don't want like tons of money. I'm not looking for happiness anymore. I've got some of that already. I'm good. What I'm looking for is to take this guy out of office, impeach him, get him out of there. Let's see his tax returns. Let's get his communications with Russia and those that he's brought into the White House with him. His choices for the people that surround him are poor. They're ignorant. They're horrible. He's got the Bannon guy whose goal in life since his career began was to destroy the American government. That's his theory. And Trump loves that theory because he can destroy the government. That means nobody's going to destroy the government, destroy the press, and that means no one's ever going to criticize me anymore, Trump says. I'll be the dictator, just like my friend Vladimir. I may even take my shirt off and get on a horse. I don't know, but I might.
The three sweetest words in podcasting? Ron Van Dam. Wow, gave myself a little erection saying that one. And I forgot to turn off the microphone.
Hey, I didn't even start the show yet.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, hi, hello.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Dick Van Dyke Show. What?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Sorry to start off so politically, but every once in a while it gets under my craw. I don't know where my craw is, but it's getting under it. I don't mean to be political. I just don't like what's going on, and I'm just expressing myself, and that's all I'm doing. And I hope to God that someday the rest of you, some of you who don't follow my path, will wake up. That's all I'm saying. That, or maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe someday I should wake up, but somewhere, somebody should wake up. Either you or me, somebody should wake up. Somebody not sleeping well. Barbara Streisand is one of them. I'm sure if Barbara Streisand just tweeted a couple of days ago, and I'm sure Trump will now call her an overrated singer. Here's what Barbara Streisand tweeted, whatever. Here's the twat that she put out. Donald Trump is making me gain weight, Barbara Streisand says. Donald Trump is making me gain weight. I start the day with liquids, but after the morning news, I eat pancakes smothered in maple syrup. And then she tweeted a couple of hours later, she says, Trump just accused Obama of tapping his phones. Time for more pancakes. That is the overrated singer, Barbara Streisand, whose close friend is the overrated actress. You know who I'm talking about there. It's a crazy world, ladies and gentlemen. It's a crazy world. Speaking of crazy worlds, I don't know if you know this, but I'm in quite a bit of pain right now. I am. And you're probably saying, Ron, why are you in pain? What's the big deal here?
It was unbelievably painful.
Yeah, here's what happened. I had this little thing on the side of my nose. I'm being very honest with you. My world is your world. Well, you know, let's not get stalky or anything, but, you know. I had this little thing on the side of my nose, this little scratch that would scab up a little bit, and then it would fall off, bleed a little bit, scab up again, fall off, bleed a little bit, scab up a little bit, on the side of my nose. Tiny little thing. So I went to my dermatologist. I go once a year. When you're a certain age, you best go to a dermatologist on an annual basis. And she tells me, a very nice woman, she knows skin like nobody knows skin. And it's good to know skin people. She says to me, Ron, that thing on your side of your nose, I don't like the looks of it. And I said, well, I thank you for your opinion very much, but what do you mean by that? She says, well, I want to just take a little thing there. I want to take a little biopsy. I said, you mean an autopsy? She said, no, a biopsy. I want to take a little bit of that stuff and send it into the lab and see what that thing is, because I don't like the looks of it. Well, I said, I don't like the looks of you. No, I was only kidding, though. She sends it into the lab. I get a call about 3 days later, and she says, Ron, you got a little bit of a skin cancer. Did you say the word? She said, yeah. She says, it's not a big deal. She says, it's not a big deal. It's topical, but we have to get rid of it. It's a very slow-growing kind of thing. You know, we're going to get you to a surgeon here, and we're going to get that, have it cleaned out and make sure it's gone. I said, fine, it's fine. So they make an appointment for me about a month later, and I go to this place, and a very, very nice surgeon guy sits down, talks to me. And he says, yeah, we're going to remove the rest of that stuff, and here we go. And he makes me lie in a chair. He injects my nose full of Novocaine. I mean, I didn't even know I had a nose. And, I got my eyes closed and all that kind of stuff, and he's got a little sheet on my face. And I said, well, it's weird. And he starts, and I don't know what's going on because I can't feel anything, but I hear things like scraping and things like that going on. Come to find that about 20 minutes later, he says, okay, he says, we think we got it all. And he says, you got to sit here for another hour. We're going to take another little biopsy here and make sure we got all of it. And I said, okay, fine. I said, what exactly did you do? He says, well, what we did was we opened up your nose. It's, you what? Excuse me? He says, we opened up your nose and made a little slit in there, and we cleaned out everything on the side of your nose. You cleaned it out? I thought it was just going to be a little thing, like a little scoop or something. He says, no, we got to, when these things happen, you got to make sure you get all of it. So that scraping I heard, that was your nose bone. Oh, my God. So they did that. I sat there in a chair, and they had a big bandage on my nose, so I didn't know, and I couldn't feel anything because I was all numbed up on my nose, so I thought it was like nothing. Comes back, and he says, good news, we got it all. We're done. He says, you got to come back next week, and we'll remove the stitches. I said, excuse me? I did you say stitches? He says, yes, yes. He says, well, you got stitches on the side of your nose. I got stitches on the side of my nose. He said, yeah, we had to open up your nose and clean it out, make sure we had all that skin cancer out of there, and we sewed it up again like a brand new sweater. I said, oh, okay, fine. About 2 hours later, all of a sudden, the Novocaine starts wearing off. And it was not fun. It felt like someone had an anvil on the bridge of my nose. It was painful stuff.
It was unbelievably painful.
It was. So I have a huge thing on my nose now, like a huge thing on my nose covering the stitches and most of my nose. And this was yesterday morning, Monday morning. I woke up this morning, and I'm taking acetaminophen, Tylenol, and it seems to be handling the pain somewhat. But I woke up this morning, the side of my face on that side of the nose is like all swollen. My eye was almost swollen shut. I mean, this guy was like fracking my nose. And God love him. He got it all out. He did his job. It didn't hurt while he was doing it. It was cool. He's the best, and I'm glad that he was my little nose surgeon here. My goodness, it was a little more than I thought it would be as far as the invasion into my face. So part of my face is almost swollen shut, and I guess it'll heal quite quickly. But that's where I'm at. So that's thank God I'm not on television right now. I was going to put out a picture of what my face looks like right now, but I was afraid someone would, you know, say, oh, Ron, you look normal. No, I'm swollen, man. And where else would you put a picture of your swollen face but on swollen Facebook? But I'm not going to do that. But I thought I'd tell you that story. And here's what I learned is, and I've told this before on the show, because this is what my dermatologist said to me. She says, you got to understand something, Ron. She says, do you stay out of the sun? I said, man, I don't even go outside. I'm a freaking vampire, man. I don't, if I go to a pool or something like that, I wear a hat, I wear sunscreen, I wear a bulletproof vest, I wear an astronaut's uniform, I wear school girl's uniform, I wear everything I possibly can. I protect myself from the sun always. I don't understand how this could have happened. And she said, it's from childhood. Childhood? That was a long time ago. She says, yes, if you have a certain type of skin and you're prone to being sunburned a lot, you know, and you're, I'm a real Caucasian, man. I'm the Caucasian. I'm very white. There's nothing in my history of any mixture whatsoever. And I wish there was at this point. So, just some people with that type of skin, when you're young, like 5-6 years old, if you're not protected from the sun, this manifests itself decades and decades and decades and decades later. I said, let's cool it on the decades part. How many decades are you going to add to your little explanation? I get it. It's from when I was a kid. And let me tell you something. When I was 5 years old, I wasn't putting on my own sunscreen. This is my parents' fault. I blame this on my parents. But they didn't know. How do they? They didn't know. They didn't know that this was going to cause problems later for me. So she says, that's how this happened. I said, great. That's great. That's just great. So that's where I'm at. I've been scraped clean. My nose looks like it went through some type of a horrible battlefield, but I'm okay. It's just that out of my right eye, can't see all that well because it's a little swollen shut. And I tell you this story because it pretty much wasted 10 minutes. And that's my goal in doing this, is to waste 10 minutes. Now, you know, any experience that anybody goes through, it's good because it's all a learning experience. As Obama said, it's a teachable moment. As Oprah says, it's an aha moment. As Trump says, it's a... So it's good. It's good. Make sure you wear sunscreen when you go out if you're a Caucasian. That's all I'm saying to you, you know. I love these Italian people walking around. They have olive skin. You're wonderful people. You really, you know, rather than get skin cancer, you simply are basically cooking yourself and basting yourself to a very, very nice complexion. So that's all that happens to you. To me, if I'm in the sun, I go from white to purple. There's no in between. There's no tanning. Tanning, never. There's no tan. There's no tan involved. There's no tan. All right, kids, let's move on. I'm grumpy.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on. Isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
Great, Ron. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Heather Bird is Executive Director with Bethany Christian Services. And I understand that today is a day that is being honored.
It is. It's Pregnancy Counselor Appreciation Day at Bethany, which we're creating awareness for our amazing pregnancy counselors that come alongside expectant parents facing very difficult decisions. So thanks again for having me, Ron.
You're very welcome. Now, tell me about pregnancy counselors. Is this a concept that's nationwide, or is it new, or what exactly is it?
It is. It's actually, Bethany wanted to kind of raise awareness to our staff that really provide critical support to men and women facing an unintended pregnancy, which is about 37% about 37% of births in the United States are unintended or unplanned. And these staff really walk alongside these men and women as they're facing this incredible decision. And so Bethany just wanted to honor our staff that do this.
Great.
Because they're really such a pivotal part of this plan for men and women.
So these are couples or singles that are looking for a direction. They don't quite know what to do about it. Is that right?
That's true, Ron. And what they really want is somebody just to come alongside them as they're trying to face this decision.
Yes.
And, you know, these counselors really just help them think through this decision. It's the hardest decision perhaps that they'll ever face.
Yeah.
And so what our staff really do is help them think through what is the right decision for your baby and how do I make that decision?
Yeah.
And they really work to help these women or these couples, as you said, look at it from every which way and make sure that when they decide what the right decision is, that they have kind of looked at it from all angles, and really they are making the choice. It's their decision. It's non-directive. It's not coercive. And they're really just there for them. You know, when they're facing an unintended pregnancy, they're scared. They're alone oftentimes.
Yeah.
And oftentimes their society is judging them and, you know, putting a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Bethany looks at our counselors and, you know, they'll go to all ends to help them make this decision. You know, we get calls in the middle of the night. We get calls early in the morning, you know. And so Bethany really wanted to find a way to say, you guys are just such playing these critical roles. And so that's what this day is all about, is saying we want to celebrate you for all this incredible work that you do.
Yeah, okay. So, but now it's Bethany Christian Services. You would assume that there's a twist on that decision because you're Christian Services as opposed to just counselors. Am I right on that?
Well, I think, you know, what we would say is this, is that, you know, there are three choices, you know, when you're thinking about an unintended pregnancy, right? And all of those choices are legal, you know, I think. But really what Bethany would say is we're about making life-affirming decisions.
Okay.
And sadly, in our country, many times, most of our clients will not even know what adoption is.
Right.
And so we really, as staff, want to help our clients know what all of their options are. And so we help them know what are your choices and make sure that you know the pros and cons about all of your decisions.
Yeah.
Because no matter what decision you make when you're facing an unintended pregnancy, there's loss involved.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure that when you make a decision that you have looked at this, that you have kind of unturned every rock, that even when you're parenting, right? Could you parent at home? Could you parent with the dad? Could you parent with Aunt Susie, you know, out in Wisconsin or whatever?
Yeah.
That you as a mom or a dad have really looked at this and you've made the decision that's best for you and this child, because it's not just about you anymore, right? It's about you and this baby.
Right.
What's the best decision? And so Bethany's not just about adoption or not just about parenting. It's about you making whatever's the best decision for you and your baby.
Okay.
And that there's loss involved no matter what decision you make. And that's that's the beauty of this as a pregnancy counselor, is you can truly come alongside this mom or this mom and dad and take off the pressure, because they're scared and alone, and they've got enough people in their lives saying, you should do this or you should do that.
Yeah.
It's really, truly about what do you think is the right decision for you and your baby? And just advocate for that mom or that mom and dad and say, you know, we want to help you.
Yeah.
And so we would say this, is that if you or you know somebody that's facing an unintended pregnancy, you don't have to be alone anymore. You know, that there can be anybody. We've got offices all across the country, and we've got a website that we would say, come, find us. We would love to help you and stand in the gap with you, and that's what these pregnancy counselors do. You know, whether it's Saturday night at midnight or whether it's a weekday, you know, go to impregnant.org. Impregnant.org, and they will come and they will be with you. They'll meet with you in a private place. You know, you don't have to be judged. You don't have to feel like somebody's going to tell you what to do anymore. They want to come alongside you, and that's what we wanted to celebrate.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem, because you get support from friends and family when you're in a situation like that, but they're all kind of loaded suggestions. They want to impose their opinions upon you, to have you do what they think is right. And you're proper in this, where you want a third party who doesn't know you, doesn't have any interest in making you do something, just presents all the options on the table and helps you discuss it so you can make your own decision. So yeah, it's a good deal what you got going there. Once again, yeah, go on.
It is. I mean, I love it. It's how I started my career at Bethany. I've been at Bethany for a long time, Ron, and it's why I'm so passionate about it. I have the opportunity to train many of these counselors, and they're in my heartbeat. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to be able to just to love on folks, and I still stay in touch with a lot of the clients that I counseled many, many years ago. It feels like decades ago. It actually was decades ago. But, you know, decades and it's ago. Something that Bethany's passionate about, and, you know, we know that whatever decision a mom or mom and dad makes, it's going to be a hard one, and we just want to be there for them. And you're right, everybody's got an opinion when you're in this situation, and you do not need one more person telling you what to do, so we just really want to be there to support them. And we would say this, it's just, again, if you're facing this or you know somebody that's facing this, you don't have to be alone anymore. So find us, like I said, it's impregnant.org, impregnant.org, and we would love to come alongside you and help you walk this journey so you're not alone anymore.
Thank you, Heather. You're very cool. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron, for all you're doing, too. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Paula Deen is very interesting. Do you remember Paula Deen? She was fat-shamed because she was fat. That's not fat. She was overweight. She was on the Food Network. Thick Southern accent, cooked everything with butter. The joke was one of her recipes was deep fried butter. You take butter and you deep fry it and then you eat it. I mean, everything was horrible with her. And then she got into talking about black people and referred to she was going to have a party at her home mansion and. Or a wedding or something, and she was putting it together, and she thought it'd be really cute if all the servants were in blackface or something. I don't know exactly, but it was pretty much that. And she got thrown off of the Food Network, and they went into her past, and they found some tapes of her saying racially biased things. And I thought that was the end of her, because that's pretty low life as far as I'm concerned. Ignorant low life. A person like that should not be in the public eye. You know, go work somewhere, go do something on your own, but don't be in public, because you're a disgrace. Somehow, 2-3 years later, she resurfaces, and now she has her own furniture company called Paula Deen Home. And apparently, this is on HSN or QVC or one of those shopping networks. She shows her Paula Deen furniture line, and the furniture line is like that Southern kind of furniture kind of thing, because she's an old Deep South kind of person, still is. And I'm just shocked. I'm shocked that the American public brings her back into her bosoms. I mean, brings the American public, brings her back into their bosoms. There's bosoms involved somewhere here. I'm shocked. Here's why. There are two things at play here. The American public should act like the American public, where if something is not acceptable, get rid of it, don't do it. But the problem is America has been so dumbed down. There are a lot of people who live in this country who agreed with Paula Deen's view on the slavery thing, where for her it was a glorious time, apparently. I mean, I can't even imagine saying that to you on the air, but that's the impression that she gave off. She should have been just off of the public in every sense of the word. It should have been done for her. But it's not. She's back with her own furniture line and people are buying it. And it concerns me. It's not Paula Deen. It's the American people that either embrace that attitude or don't do anything about it. And to me, that's shocking and sad. There are a lot of sad things going on. I think we're finally starting to find out who we are as a people. And it's sad in many regards. Okay, we've got another interview coming up, and we're going to do so right after these words. So please don't go anywhere. Just stay where you are. Don't move at all. Don't move.
Do you know that there is one item that can not only increase your home's beauty, but its value? That would be placemats. Hello, I'm George Karanapikopoulos, owner of George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse, your one-stop for all your placemat needs. We have a placemat for every room of your house. That's right, placemats are not just for the dining room anymore. Anywhere you might make a spill, or maybe where you eat, like in front of the TV, I do it all the time like you. You want a placemat. We have fancy placemats, like in bamboo or teak. That's right, teak. Nice plastic laminate ones for no stains, even blue. We can custom make you placemats in as little as 2 weeks. Come to our showroom at the intersection of Route 27 and the Holbrook Turnpike. You're going to like what you see. Your placemat is waiting for you at George K's Wholesale Placemat Warehouse.
Hello, good morning.
How are you today? Good?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Great. Elizabeth Romero is Division Executive, Small Business, Bank of America. And I understand that a survey was done recently by Bank of America.
You're absolutely right.
Of course. And this was about Hispanic small business owners. Where were the results?
So the survey was actually conducted, and the results were pretty much a lot of great optimism out there when it comes to our Hispanic business owners. Mm-hmm. A lot of great optimism, not only the great optimism, but some of the great things that we're seeing out there is what it's indicated or what it's stated is really their overall growth that they project for 2017, mm-hmm. and also their overall revenue when it comes for the next 5 years, as well as their plan to hire in 2017.
Great. Now, one would say, well, how does that differ from non-Hispanic business owners?
Yeah, so when we think about the overall revenue increase that based on what the study indicated, mm-hmm. the Hispanic are stating 71%, for non-Hispanic, 51%. For the overall growth within the next 5 years, Hispanic, 76%, and 55% for the non-Hispanic. And then the plan to hire in 2017, Hispanic 54% and non-Hispanic was 24%.
Now, what would explain that? What do you make of that?
Yeah, what I would say, the plan to hire, obviously there's a huge difference in a gap, right? So that has to go back on the overall increase that they're going to see on their revenue, right, whether it's this year or the next 5 years as well, too. I would also say it attributes to the great optimism that they have, as well as this is a growing sector. It is growing very quickly and rapidly. So I would attribute all those factors into why there's a huge difference on the plan to hire.
When was this survey conducted?
We do the survey we've been doing it for the past 5 years, and we do it every 6 months, and it was conducted in November of last year.
Okay. Was that before the election?
Actually, it was during the election.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I would have expected the results to be not as favorable because of all the conversation during the election.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say. It's when I think about our Hispanic small business owners, they're resilient. They've gone through a lot of change as well, too. And you know, when they actually think about what they're currently are doing and how they are the providers for their family, this is what they do their business. They're very optimistic.
Well, that's wonderful. That's good news. Now, how does what kind of challenges would the Hispanic business owner have? A challenge that perhaps any business owner would have.
Yeah, just like anything, everybody has their strengths. Their strengths or any challenges. Some of the challenges that they actually have for our Hispanic. The number one being the maintain the work life balance. Came in at 23%. The second one, I would say, the qualify employees. I would say it would be for anybody. We want to make sure that we aligned, you know, the great team and the employees that you're able to trust. So really having those qualified employees and being able to understand the regulations and policies.
Interesting. Okay. Are there parts of the country that are more friendly to this growth than other parts?
The overall survey was actually conducted not focusing on specific areas. It was more about the overall. Okay. We did not go very specific into some specific areas.
Right. Okay, good. Over the year, how many years has this survey been taking place?
We've been doing it for the past 5 years.
Okay. And what does it show over that five-year span?
Well, we focus on different things. So the one that we did in November, the focus was really more into the Hispanic business owners, and it was the very first time that we did that.
Okay.
Every 6 months when we do one, it's actually a different focus.
All right.
And the reason why is we want to be able to understand what's going through their mind and be able to understand what we need to do to be able to help them as well, too.
All right. Okay. So even though the focuses are different, I assume that there's a business climate attitude that would take place over the 5 years. In other words, is the economy improving for business owners?
Exactly. And it is. And what, I mean, this is important for us because it's a way for us to examine, to see the growth, to really see exactly what they need and how we're able to really serve them better in order for them to actually be successful. So we've actually deployed more specialists within our financial centers. We've also been focused on ensuring that the specialist is a reflection of the community, so when that customer comes in, they're able to be helped as well.
Now, bank organizations such as Bank of America actually do play a very large role in the success of small business owners, I understand.
Correct.
And, okay, well, how do we get more information about the survey and anybody who wants some support in small business?
Yeah, my recommendation is if they want to get more information, whether they're just starting their business or really expanding their business, or even if they have their business already and it's very successful, walk into a financial center and get in front of one of our specialists who are specialized in small business. They could also go into our website and make an appointment for convenience, and they could actually get all that information, tools and resources, and make the appointment at www.bankofamerica.com/small business.
Well, there you go. She's Elizabeth Romero, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Take care. I'm out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.